You're not sick, Amelia, no.
No?
No, you're a little farsighted.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
Thanks for listening.
Enjoy the show.
Yeah, man, I'll kick us off this week.
It's good. Since I'm chewing a granola bar, I should probably swallow that before we start.
Yeah, fucking swallow that, dude. Don't chew it first, though.
Well, that sounds the best.
Solid. Sounds juicy.
Yeah.
What's going on over there? Lord, I'm all done. Right. I'm done chewing now.
Are you good? Done? Okay, all right.
This is David Bruckner, director of The Ritual, and you are listening to The Grindhouse Messiah.
Roll on thunder, shine on lightning, the days are long and the nights are frightening. Nothing matters anyway, and that's the hell of it. Winter comes and the winds blow colder. Well, some grow wiser, you just grew older. You never listened anyway, and that's the hell of it. Good for nothing, bad in bed. Nobody likes you and you're better off dead. Goodbye, goodbye. We've all come to say goodbye, 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 goodbye. Born defeated, died in vain. Super destructive, you were hooked on pain. And though your music lingers on, all of us are glad you're gone. If I could live my life half as worthlessly as you, I'm convinced that I'll wind up burning too. Love yourself as you love no other. Be no man's fool and be no man's brother. We're all born to die alone, you know that's the hell of it. Life's a game where they're bound to beat you, and time's a trick they can turn to cheat you. We only waste it anyway, and that's the hell of it. Good for nothing, bad in bed. Nobody likes you and you're better off dead. Goodbye, goodbye. We've all come to say goodbye, 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 goodbye. Born defeated, died in vain. Super destructive, you were hooked on pain. Though your music lingers on, well, all of us are glad you're gone.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Grindhouse Messiah. I'm your co-host, Blaine, and with me, as always, is Justin. Hey, Justin, how's it going, man?
I'm doing pretty good. Behind the curtain moment, you're currently trying to survive a hurricane, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, man. Hurricane Matthew is coming through, about to knock the fucking lights out and all that fun stuff. But, I mean, we're out here in Atlanta. We've been hit by these little hurricanes, a few times over the past few years. So it's always kind of fun. Get a late start to the day. Yeah, it's not too bad.
Oh, so you get to have a late start tomorrow at work, huh?
That'll be nice. Oh, I will flat out lie and say everything's flooded. So
hey,
I'm sleeping in either way.
Are listening. He wasn't lying when he said this.
Oh, okay. Straight up lying. So
today we're getting a chance to talk to some awesome folks, and I guess I'll just start real quick with we'll go age before beauty. We'll go today, so we'll go with Anthony. I'm assuming because he's our director, and I just assume he's a little bit older than Dana. So Anthony,
there's no proving that.
There's no proving it. Yes, I don't know officially, but Anthony De Blasi, why don't you introduce yourself?
Well, I'm Anthony De Blasi, director of Extremity, which we're here to talk about, and some previous films, Last Shift, Clive Barker's Dread. He's a producer on Midnight Meat Train. Done a lot of stuff in horror and thriller. Stuff that Dana will never watch.
Excuse me.
Well, we'll get into that. That sounds like a fun little jab there. Before I move on to Dana, though, just wanted to ask you, Anthony, a little bit about how did you get into horror? Like, what got you into this world?
I I'm from Boston originally, and I came down to Los Angeles, finished my last semester at Emerson College, which had a like a transfer program. So I actually started interning at Marvel Studios, and they weren't doing anything at the time. They were in post production on the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, so that was like. And it's like everything before Sam Raimi's Spider-Man was terrible. So they were just about to like pop, you know, with that stuff. But, you know, I wasn't really doing much there. It was like photocopying comics and like making packets for the studios and stuff because they were pitching projects. So I talked to my advisor about getting into horror. I've always been a big fan of horror, obviously, and special makeup effects, and I was like, I have time on my hands, let me kind of explore that. And it happens that Joe Daly, who was my producing partner for a long time, he had gone to Emerson for like a semester or something, yeah, half a year, and he was working with Clive Barker, and I reached out to him, and I just kind of nagged them until they took a meeting with me, and then I sat down with Clive, and we got along really well. We all got along well. And I just, that's it. I was thrown into the fire at Clive's company. And fast learning curve.
So with your, with you saying you were always kind of into horror and stuff, how did, like, were there films growing up that you remember as being like the ones that really kind of bit you as your first, like, oh man, I love this stuff.
Yeah. You know, the films that I love aren't really the kind of movies I make. Like when I was, I loved monsters and special makeup and doing special makeup effects and like Halloween stuff. And when I actually was in LA, that was something else. I was like, maybe I can get in. Cause when you get down here and you're like, oh, here's the entertainment business. And you're like, okay, now what? And I was like, well, at least like makeup and stuff is tangible. Like I can do it. And show people, hey, this is what I can do. So the movies I grew up on, like American Werewolf in London, Fright Night, Lost Boys, you know, it was anything like Halloween, Season of the Witch. Like I liked things that had, you know, creature effects or, you know, like Clash of the Titans. I loved when I was a kid and stuff like that. It was like anything that had anything to do with monsters and effects. So that was my, that's why I loved horror. I wasn't so much into like, you know, like slashers and stuff when I was younger until I saw, well, Nightmare on Elm Street, which we'll talk about. I saw that when I was like 8, you know, my dad rented it. We had just like gotten a VHS and I watched it, and you know, I was too young to watch a movie like that. That I'm sure had some effect on me, but my dad loved movies. He loves movies today, and it's like I was watching inappropriate movies at very young ages. He didn't care, and that was fine. I grew up on everything like that.
No, that's awesome. So Dana, tell us more about being in these movies you won't watch. How did you come around here?
Well, so as for me, so my introduction to horror was Anthony, and it was Extremity. So
see, I told.
Growing up, I didn't watch a lot.
Wow, this is a pretty extreme way to get introduced.
Scared me with like Jurassic Park.
Right.
And then, you know, as I was older, the movies that scared me would be like Paranormal Activity, and then that was it. It was too scary. So my introduction was Anthony, and now I'm having an introduction to this whole genre, this whole world, and it's crazy. It's new to me, but it's awesome.
Oh, that is awesome. So, I mean, beyond horror, what kind of got you into acting?
Into acting? I started when I was 12, so I've been in and out of it throughout, you know, growing up. I was from Calgary, so I mean there's a little bit here, there's not a lot. So, and then I moved to Toronto. So the thing that originally got me into it, I would say, was I think when I was 12, I just, you know, my mom started, we got me an agent, and then I think I just booked a couple of gigs, and I realized it was something I liked, and I kept going with it.
Oh, that's awesome. And we'll get more into Extremity, but I mean, how was it, you know, going in and really taking, you know, being the star of this and literally being in just about every shot of this film?
No, it was crazy. It was like extremely physical. The script is extremely wild and crazy, and there's lots of layers to it, and trying to grasp all that in a short amount of time. And I mean, I think the hardest thing with Extremity is like Allison goes there willingly and she wants these things, but at the same time, sometimes she's in too far and she's fighting these things. So it's just like this delicate balance between wanting it but fighting it. And that was difficult, let alone like the weather, the conditions, the physicality of the whole thing. So it was crazy.
Although that is awesome, and we'll get more into Extremity towards the end.
Definitely.
But, well, we're gonna start out with your pick for this episode, which is, of course, Nightmare on Elm Street. What kind of got you to pick this one?
I went with this one because it was a classic, and you know, it changed the genre in a lot of ways. I like Wes Craven's. I mean, the other ones I picked were Scream, so I just thought this one was. I mean, it has more that psychological element as well, being your nightmare. So there's a lot of other forces at play that are scary, let alone just the effects and the character of Freddy himself.
Yeah, and I got to shout out to both of you guys as well with your selections. You gave me kind of nice little lists to pick from as we put the episode together. And both of you named the movie Hocus Pocus, which is an absolute favorite of mine.
Yes.
I don't know that it totally fits like our podcast aesthetic, because we're kind of like a grindhouse podcast. So I was like, well, you know. But on the other hand, like I kind of wanted to talk about it. I was very tempted to be like, we should just talk about Hocus Pocus.
I mean,
but, you know,
Hocus Pocus
is so good.
Not a grindhouse movie.
You're right. It is totally a grindhouse movie.
I just watched Hocus Pocus 2 days ago. I got the new Blu-ray.
Nice.
Watched. They have like I don't know if you got it, but they put all their special features in the movie.
Oh wow!
Watch, it's like a pop-up video thing.
That's pretty freaking cool. I have not seen that. That you just kind of enticed me to pick that up, because you know, I have it in like four other formats already. So,
yeah.
But that's why I didn't pick up the Blu-ray. But my kids absolutely love Hocus Pocus, and my wife too. Like, it was one of the first ones we kind of like dove into with them, and it's one we watch. Well, not only this time of year, we watch it a couple times usually every year. And then we usually still throw it on sometime in like the summer, just because we feel like it, you know. So,
what's great about Hocus Pocus, and me being from Boston, is that movie was shot in Salem, and you can tell. Like a lot of movies that take place on the East Coast in Salem, they were never shot there, but that Hocus Pocus, that whole thing was shot at the peak of fall in Salem.
That's really cool. And that's something I wouldn't have been able to pick out, because I've never been to Salem. But as somebody that's local, I'm sure it's really, like you said, kind of obvious to you.
Yeah, Salem, I mean, you know, it was probably like an hour, not even 45 minutes away from where I live. So we'd go down there at Halloween, and it's crazy. The whole month of October, it's awesome in Salem.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I remember going to Salem growing up, but always at like the worst times, like midsummer or in the middle of winter, and everything's closed, and it's just kind of this ghost town. But I imagine in my head how awesome it is right now.
Yeah, when you go in the summer, like I actually brought my wife there in like August, and she's like, "Yeah, this is okay." I'm like, "Yeah, it kind of sucks. Like, it doesn't have the same feeling."
No, absolutely. And see, for me, like with Hocus Pocus, I haven't seen it since I was probably like 12. So I in not this weekend, but the upcoming weekend, which doesn't matter to anyone listening. But I'm taking my son to go see it, because I have no memory of it whatsoever. Every year people yell at me, tell me to watch it. I just forget. But no, I'm excited to finally watch that again. But on Nightmare on Elm Street, Justin, I know this is one of your favorite flicks. Why don't you dig us right in?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go ahead and give like a true on synopsis of it like I do with a lot of other films, because I think everyone listening to this podcast has probably seen Nightmare on Elm Street. It's the Freddy movie, you know? So, basically, the idea is this crazy, awful dude who's dead, and he haunts people's dreams and then actually kills them in their dreams, and they don't actually wake up. So, you know, I'm a big fan of the whole series, personally. But I would say that my trilogy, like the three that I love the most, are this one, Dream Warriors, and New Nightmare. They're my favorite three of the series.
I was going to say, he's going to say 1, 3, and 7.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, I just love all three of those so much. But, I mean, I'll be honest, even the worst installments, I still like a lot. So, you know, yeah. It's a fun Dana, have you seen the other Nightmare movies?
No, I've only seen the second one. I've seen 1 and 2.
The second one is a really interesting one.
Okay. Part 2 is... And everyone's going to hate me for this. I'm not a fan of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. I like Part 2 because it's really weird. You know, a.k.a. the gay one. it's to me, like... See, I didn't grow up with Nightmare on Elm Street. For some reason, once again, kind of like Hocus Pocus, just... wasn't really, it wasn't the movie I watched. Our sleepovers, we never watched the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. I just didn't grow up with it. So as I got later into my teens and stuff, I started watching it, and I don't know, I felt like it was kind of something lost on there. I mean, there's a lot of things that I like about it. I love the effects. I love Wes Craven, especially those first couple of movies with like Last House on the Left The Hills of Eyes. Why am I going like crazy?
Yeah, The Hills of Eyes. Yeah.
I like those lines. When we got in there, it's a little I don't know. It's very polished. But I have a love for it. But Part 2 for me is just such a weird movie, and I love the way they moved kind of Freddy Krueger into this different kind of area. I mean, once you get to Part 3, all that I can't keep up. I lose interest. But no, that Part 2 is fucking rad.
I will defend, because yes, most people hate Part 2, but I always defend Part 2, meaning like it has amazing cinematography. It had a legit cinematographer, excellent score. Because like most of those things were built in the second movie. Because the first movie, it has the theme, but it's got a pretty cheesy score because it's a lot of synth. And then in the second movie, it was orchestra. And then his makeup in the second movie is still my favorite. He had the contacts. Yeah. He had that hag look. I think he's terrifying in the second one.
Oh, absolutely. He's a much, to me, he's such a scary character. And if I remember correctly, Part 2 has the one with the dogs as well, right? And I always thought those things are just terrifying. So, I mean, yeah, it's to me, it's just... such an interesting, I liken it to that that Halloween 3 kind of idea where it was just this completely different thing that kind of gets passed over in the other films, but it's such a neat one-off, and maybe it's something that would have worked really well on its own if it was separate from kind of the Nightmare on Elm Street legacy overall.
That's probably true. Yeah, I think that's probably a fair point. You know, coming back to the first one, since we were kind of focusing a little bit on that, Heather Langenkamp as the star, as kind of like her, you know, her movie, in a lot of ways. I don't think she's very good at all in this movie. Like, I really like this movie, but like I just rewatched it, you know, last week. So, you know, we talked about it, and you know, like I the whole time I'm sitting there like, couldn't we have swapped like Heather Langenkamp and Amanda, whatever her name is, Tina? Because Tina, to me, is just such a better actress. But now here's the thing: I think Heather Langenkamp was solid after this film, but you could tell that this is like really early in her career. She just really struggled in this movie.
Data, what do you think?
Data, you're the actress. So, yeah.
I mean, I didn't think she was terrible. Also, I don't know. I mean, I agree. Doing the swap would have been pretty awesome. But I don't know. I didn't think she was that terrible.
It's the mom.
To
me, the mom is the weakest one in that.
Yes, agreed.
Oh, that's a fair point, too. She's pretty bad, too.
Yes.
But I guess she's supposed to be like drunk all the time. It's just like really... crazy.
It's so tacky. It's so tacky and everything. Yeah, like the way she says everything is just like she's on her way somewhere, and it just doesn't make sense. It's very choppy.
Yeah, and that's how I kind of feel that don't kill me though, but I think it's not a very well written movie either. So these lines, like, they're delivered really strange because I think they're written really weird. So when the mother's doing that weird, like, I'm in a hurry, I'm running away, blah, 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 you know, like, a lot of that I think falls kind of on the script too, where it's not, in my opinion, granted, I just don't think that anyone could have done those lines very well.
Yeah.
That's probably fair.
Nightmare on Elm Street, it's like, it has some of the worst elements, but it's, I think, the scariest of the series. You know, because the scary stuff, I think, works really well. Like, with Tina getting flung across the room, and
Tina's death scene will always go down as, like, one of the best in horror history. It's so, like, insane.
And Johnny Depp's death is just so crazy. It's like, and like, with Tina in the hallway, you know, I mean, that movie's got some scary scenes in it that are still scary, like, still work really well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Wes Craven, if nothing else, he can always create this just great set pieces. So even for as much as I kind of rail on the movie for things that I don't like, yeah, no, all the kills, all the kind of murder set pieces throughout the film are fantastic. And I agree, it still gives like a genuine level of fright throughout those films. And like I said, I didn't watch this to death, so rewatching it, this may be only... in my life, probably the third or fourth time I had seen it, and I mean each of those scenes is crafted really well.
I definitely, and yeah. I start my conversation by saying, you know, that Heather Langenkamp wasn't very good, but I'll also say, I on the other hand believe, I mean, everybody knows that Robert Englund is Freddy Krueger, and he's so charismatic on screen. But John Saxon is pretty amazing in this movie to me. Like, there's something about his presence whenever he's on screen that really works for me, too.
Oh, yeah, Saxon is just always great.
That's fair.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about one of the greatest actors.
He's a star of genre film, man. I mean, even some more not quote-unquote genre film, you know. You're right. Maybe I'm just stating the obvious by saying John Saxon's awesome.
Fucking Enter the Dragon, dude, yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. He was their, like, piece of stunt casting in that movie, right? He was, like, the actor. They were like, we need at least one actor in this movie that's, you know, that's legit.
No, right.
He was the guy.
Fair.
We got to get all the kids here. You know, we got to put that name on there. And being the resident creep here, are any of you familiar with Craven's adult film, The Fireworks Woman?
No.
Okay.
I'm aware it exists, but that's the extent of my awareness of it.
One of the weirdest things in watching Nightmare on Elm Street is a lot of, like, the set and the way shots are framed and kind of set up, especially throughout Heather Langenkamp's room, it's nearly identical to a lot of the setups, even the telephone, everything like that. It is such a bizarre thing to see, kind of retrofitting it in his filmography, but going and looking and seeing that adult film. And seeing kind of how he was setting things up, a lot of the focus and cinematography is very, very similar. It's kind of fun to kind of line that up to watch, you know, that he was kind of practicing at that moment for what you see there.
When did he make... I had no idea Wes Craven made an adult movie. When did he make it?
1975. he did it under the name Abe Snake, I believe. And it is a very... I think its main release was originally Japan. But you can get a hold of it. But it's a very, like... It's kind of part. It's a very art. It's like the artsier side of XXX, but it's very. It's incest heavy about two siblings There's a lot of taboo in it. Like it's an interesting piece of adult film. Because I mean, I'm not sure if you guys have listened before, but I am a big fan of kind of that golden era adult film, and it's strong. It's really well shot. But heads up to everybody, there's a lot of pee.
Really? That's amazing.
Yes, it is a very, like, it is a hard triple X feature. But also, I mean, you just see I don't know, it's so interesting at that time to see some of these filmmakers, like Martin Scorsese and Lies, that shot, you know, adult film, and see them, like, working, like, legitimately working on their craft and seeing, like, the film movement and everything like that. It's worth at least flipping through and watching here and there, especially through the kind of exposition scenes, to see him basically kind of doing this whole suburban setting, but with a bunch of hardcore incestuous sex in between.
That's the great stuff about watching, like, porn from that era, because it was real. I mean, they were making movies and they were taking it very seriously. You know, it was like, and when you see it, and that's what you see it with these early filmmakers, it's like, it's kind of crazy to watch pornography, you know, shot on film and have a story like that. It's cool. It's always cool to, like, go back and watch those movies. Dana, you have homework.
Yeah. I'm trying to find it. I can't even find it. I mean, I can see. I can't find where to watch it, though. I'm trying.
I love that you're looking for it. That's so great.
Make sure you have your firewall up for downloading that movie. But I think it's amazing. And I mean, you look at that era, and a lot of what they were doing in their minds was like political think pieces and something that they really built up in their head, which is fantastic. You watch movies like The Opening of Misty Beethoven, Devil and Miss Jones, Part 1, 2, 3, and 4 are all fantastic. Sex World, which is so funny to watch now with everyone loving Westworld so much. It's like, hey, yeah. have you seen this?
It's been done. It's been a long time.
Because people are like, oh, yeah, the one with Telly Savalas. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
it's the porno one, Sex World, just like Westworld, but you know, with sex.
which Westworld was too.
isn't that a large portion of what Westworld's about? Like people just going there so they can have sex.
I just keep falling asleep because there's no sex.
Oh man, is that your problem with the new show?
That's my problem with the new show. It lacks hardcore pornography.
Blaine.
There really is a lack of sex on that show, right? There, and I kind of never thought about it until, because I loved the original Westworld, and it's like they do kind of shy away from the. Well, do they? I mean, I don't know. There's some orgies, I think, in the season one.
Any science fiction film in the 70s has orgies, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And then there's Savalas.
Future World. I don't know anything about that.
I've never seen Future World.
Future World is awful.
It's awful. It's really bad. You're like, what? What happened?
Yeah, no, it's definitely what they quickly said, ooh, people liked Westworld, let's make Future World. But it's kind of cool because on the show you're kind of seeing them make their way through that same that follow up, but in a much better way. Because as much as I joke about it, Westworld's fantastic. But sorry for derailing. Justin.
No, it's okay. It's a really interesting conversation, and I mean, you know, as far as Nightmare goes, I mean, I think most people who are listening to this probably know that, you know, the idea for it all came from, you know, Wes Craven reading about these kids who were, you know, having these violent nightmares and not waking up and people not knowing what was going on, and you know, it was really, and you know, so he kind of turned that into this crazy thing, and that psychological side of it is really what makes it so different from other things that are quote unquote slashers from that era. It's such a different type of, it's not really a slasher even though people call it that, you know, it's its own thing.
Yeah.
But
it has that holy grail of like everyone can relate to it. There's no way you can. It's like everybody has to go.
It's nightmares. It's universally scary.
Yeah.
Right. And everyone has to sleep. Like, you can't not sleep.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you just get to a point where your body doesn't allow you to stay awake anymore. And that's the creepiest part about it all. You know, so ultimately everyone must sleep until I guess everyone can die. So, you know, it's just kind of what it is. Speaking of movies that are wholly different than anything else from their era, the other movie that we selected to talk about today is a very original, unique film as well. And Anthony, you brought to us Phantom of the Paradise. Why don't you tell us a little bit about why and what you love about this film?
Well, number one, I was psyched that you picked that from my list because I knew there's no way Dana had ever seen that movie.
No, I'm not sure, but I watched
it. And I'm like, so we're going to have like an up-to-date point of view of Brian De Palma's Phantom of the Paradise.
That's exciting.
It is exciting. That was one of those early movies that my dad really liked. When I was a kid, you know, I saw it really young and the things that's, you know, in those faint memories of a child. And then I think I rediscovered it probably when I was like 14 or 15, but it was like the band on the stage when they're the like kind of misfit style band. There's the Tutti Fruits and then they change names several times.
Yeah, the undead.
Yeah.
But, and they were, you know, like Kiss. So they come out, and in my head, I remember seeing that in total awe. It was like the perfect mingling of like metal and horror, and they were like cutting people's limbs off, and it was crazy. And I was like, "This is amazing." And then, you know, you watch it later, and it's hokey, intentionally hokey. I mean, it's like, you know, they're cutting. They have these plastic blades, and they're cutting mannequins apart, and you can obviously tell it's not supposed to be real. It's a show in the audience, but those scenes are really what stuck with me. And then when I watched it later, and still I legit love that movie. I love the music in that movie. I love Paul Williams.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah music is so good.
Like, that's a movie that I would love or see someone else remake, because
I agree
there's so much to play with in that movie. When I was at Clive's years ago, I showed that movie to Joe, and I was like, we should try to get in on doing a remake of this. And really early on, we were like, Guillermo del Toro wanted to remake it, and we had a brief conversation with him, but then we had like a brief conversation with Marilyn Manson, and because, you know, Manson would be, I mean, kind of a good Phantom. Oh, yeah. But
oh yeah, is Winslow? Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
he is Winslow, isn't he?
He is Winslow. I mean, he is. And it's like, but to me, that movie has such an artistry to it. The songs and how he's playing the piano. Probably my favorite scene is when they're testing out the Phantom's voice. And
that is so cool.
Yeah, they're playing a great piece of music by Paul Williams, and he's playing the piano, and he's plugging his voice into all these different systems, and it's like, I don't know, I still love that movie.
Yeah, no, this, no.
So this one is probably one there might be a few people who haven't seen, so I don't want to roll over without giving a little bit of a brief plot description, and I'm just going to cheat and read right out of IMDb, although I'd hope that
it's Phantom of the Opera.
It's not all it is. It's also Dorian Gray, and it's also Faust, and it's also
very much.
But yeah. A disfigured composer sells his soul for the woman he loves so that she will perform his music. However, an evil record tycoon betrays him and steals his music to open his rock palace known as the Paradise. So, yeah, so there's the IMDb description of the film.
Oh yeah, you nailed it there. And before we move on, I just had to stress right there, Anthony, that was the most subtle horror flex of all time. You're like, when I was at Clive's. You know, Clive Barker.
I worked there a long time. I don't know if you like. I mean, I worked with Clive for like 11 years.
No, that is awesome.
That's awesome.
I'll mention it later when I start to dote on you for my love of Dread as well as Last Shift. But you know, that is very awesome. But yeah, see, this is like a melding of, this movie here is like a melding of just about everything I like. We talk a lot off, you know, off air, and Justin knows that I have this strange affinity. I love musicals.
I do too, but I have better taste in them, so.
No, I'm telling you, man, dude, Mamma Mia 2 is the truth. I love it, love it, love it. And I'm going to try not to break into Fernando, but.
Which, by the way, he did with me on the phone yesterday.
Every time I mention it, I feel compelled to sing Fernando as Cher. It's amazing. But this, it combines so many things I love. I love Paul Williams. I love Jessica Harper, Brian De Palma. I mean, and I love how he shows that restraint too, where he doesn't go to Brian De Palma. He lets us get a few of these, you know, these side by side shots and a lot of that where there's flourishes and you remember, oh yeah, I'm watching a Brian De Palma movie, but he never goes too far. It's for such an over the top, you know, experimental filmmaker. He knows when to show that restraint. And for me, like, every single time I watch this movie, the moment that gets me on board, and I don't know, it's so emotionally charging, is just that opening when they're moving the juicy fruits out, and he's just kind of dicking around on the piano. He's singing the cantata, and it's just like, oh wow, this is not only a good musical, it's made by someone who, like, you see that Hitchcock sort of, like, I don't know, that framing that you go, oh this is important, and I don't know, it emotionally draws me in and kind of keeps me you know, sucked in, where I'm like, okay, let me toss away my phone, let me get off the computer, you know, and I immediately I get sucked in. So now this is something I was so happy that this was picked, because I don't know, it's even though it's not exactly Halloween kind of movie, it gives me that vibe and gets me excited for that fun side of Halloween horror movies.
But
Dana, everyone's listening to me. We want to get a fresh take on 1974's Phantom of the Paradise.
And Dana, don't feel pressured that we all love it. You gotta be honest with us.
We won't all quickly turn on you and attack you in your person.
And make you go through everything in extremity again.
it was like certainly one of the strangest films, the strangest things I've ever seen. But I can respect a lot of elements about it. I mean, yeah, like the costumes, the characters, the musical elements. There was a lot of really, really cool stuff, a lot of talent in there as well. But, I mean, and visually, I mean, it was just so cool visually, but it was strange. It was, I mean, one of the strangest movies I've ever watched. And it was so long, too. I kept wondering, like, not when is it over, but, like,
it is lengthy. No, you're right. It is lengthy, yeah.
Not that long.
I only felt that long.
It felt really long.
I do think it's one of those things that it can, if you're not fully on board, it could drag. I could definitely see that, but no, you've got, man. I don't know about you guys. I have a strong love for Paul Williams. Not only his songwriting, but his acting as well, because I mean, a lot of times I forget all the things that I love him in, you know, like popping up in I believe it's Conquest of the Planet of the Apes,
one of them,
yeah, as well as like Rules of Attraction, all these moments where he pops up, you're like, oh god, it's Paul Williams, that adorable little man, you know,
and who also wrote hit songs for, you know, little people like Bowie, Three Dog Night.
Oh yeah,
you know, I mean, god, it's insane.
Yeah, then
didn't he write the Rainbow Connection from the Muppet movie?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh
yeah,
man.
Yeah. So I mean,
more musicals that will make me cry.
Oh, yeah, did you watch the Paul Williams documentary?
I did. Yes.
No.
That is.
Yeah, it's, man, cool.
That is really cool. It's such an interesting career.
Yeah.
And I love that that they choose to put him in that role, because Paul Williams is not exactly leading man, you know, material.
Yes, he's playing this sex symbol that everyone fawns over, and he's like, He's 5'2", kind of a little bit portly, and just a weird-looking dude.
Yeah, it's like this weird baby face.
Yeah.
Right. He's just a weird-looking guy, and you're like, wow, they're all really fawning over this guy.
Yeah, they're like, man, everyone's going crazy for this little Kathy Bates.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God.
You got to watch Paul Williams on the Sesame Street. No, not, no, on the Muppet Show.
Yeah, yeah. Muppet Show, I know what you're talking about. That's awesome.
It's such a weird, creepy episode with him on it. It's like so weird. I love it.
No, and I know that you guys probably already know, but I thought it was so interesting. You guys, with Jessica Harper taking that role, she beat out Linda Ronstadt, and I think you see how well she does, like, you know, of just commanding performances, pulling off the songs, as well as being able to act. I mean, God, Jessica Harper's so good.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see her in that, because that Suspiria remake coming up. It's nice to know that we're going to see her again, you know, in that. But yeah, no, she's fantastic.
I also like that she played Janet Weiss in Shock Treatment, the follow-up to Rocky Horror.
Oh, yeah, I always forget about Shock Treatment.
Me too.
It's not a particularly good movie. Yeah, although the music in it is pretty cool.
No, it's not.
It's like Grease 2.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait, hold up. I'm a Grease 2 fan. So.
Yeah. I
do also own Shock Treatment on VHS, and I had, like, my wife, when we first started dating, bought it for me at this little rinky-dink store because I'd been looking for it for so long. And I think it was like $25 because it was super rare at the time. Oh, man, I've watched it twice, and it's still sitting in the attic now. So,
if you want to talk about it, go ahead.
Well, since we're on musicals, you know, I'm going to segue into a Christmas musical that if you've never seen, you have to watch. And for some reason, it's not that popular of a film, but Albert Finney's Scrooge. Have you ever seen it?
Albert Finney's Scrooge? No. I don't think I have. No.
Oh God, Albert Finney is Scrooge, and it's a musical of the Christmas Carol, and it is by far my favorite. I watch that movie every year at Christmas. It is to me the most tragic rendition of a Christmas Carol. Hmm. It's excellent if you haven't seen it.
Wow, well, I'm looking at the cast, man. Jacob Marley is Alec Guinness.
Yeah.
Oh man. Oh, Michael Medwin. Oh, there's a lot of good people. David Collins is, wow, good cast.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, no, I have seen this like a million times, you know, just, you know, like the days of Blockbuster Video and stuff. It just never, I didn't know it was a musical, to be honest with you, or I would have hopped right on that.
Yeah, watch it this year. You're good. Oh, yeah.
I mean, we might be calling you up to have you back on the episode.
Christmas episode, let's do it. I know, I could sing every song in that movie.
All right, let's hear it.
That'll be the episode. You and Blaine duet. Yes. So.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Oh, man, I'm trying not to sing Fernando.
Are you both fans or not fans of musicals in general? I'm just curious.
I say I'm half-half. I'm not a huge musical fan. But you know what? Every time it's like I never want to watch one, but I've never disappointed every time I do watch it.
You're like, I'm into it. I definitely am. I like, granted, I have not seen Mamma Mia 2 yet, so I'm not
either. I'm going to now, tonight.
Here we go again.
Oh, my Lord. I can't wait to hear everybody's reaction. Blaine's like, why aren't you watching it? I was like, because I have better things to do.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, because that movie is solidly in my top five films of the year. And, it's well shot. It's got really like charming acting, great use of ABBA songs, and I mean it's shot in the in the Greek islands and looks fantastic, and you get to see a younger version of Colin Firth sing Waterloo. What else do you want?
Wait, did they like digitally make him young?
No, it's just like an other guy that's supposed to be young. Sorry. I just don't.
He just looks like Colin Firth.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty awesome.
So you just call him young Colin Firth because you know.
I don't care what his name is.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I'm sure the actress here isn't gonna is totally in love with the fact that you just blow off some poor actor who's trying to make.
Hey, you know what? I'm gonna go watch that movie tonight on your recommendation. So.
Oh my god, nice. That is awesome! Please let me know what you think because
we want you both to love it and then come back and be like, look, Anthony and Dana loved it, and you still won't watch it. All right.
I just don't understand why you don't like why you don't like. Sweet fun.
I just don't really like ABBA, but that's a whole other story. All right. So on the awkward transition here, just to get us out of this conversation, is I want to talk about a movie that's completely different again than the other two we talked about, and that's the movie you guys did, Extremity, which just came out. I guess a couple weeks ago now.
Yeah, October 2nd was it where it dropped on DVD and Blu-ray.
Right, and we both got a chance to watch it. We both enjoyed it quite a bit. And why don't we just start a little bit with, a spoiler-free nation of, a little bit about the plot. What is it about?
It's essentially about the exploration of extreme haunts, and it's about a girl named Allison who has a lot in her past she's dealing with, and she feels like exercising her demons at this extreme haunt called Perdition would be a good way to get over them. And for people who don't know what extreme haunts are, because a lot of people don't, it's essentially, we go to these haunted houses and things at Halloween, like Universal Studios or whatever, or Haunted Hayride. Extreme haunts are places like that, except they can touch you, torture you physically and psychologically. Most of them you have to sign a waiver because you could get injured. Some of them, they used to not have safe words, but I think all of them have safe words now.
Yeah, I think McCamey was the last one that was kind of forced to.
Yeah, the holdout.
those upstanding citizens over at McCamey.
Let me ask you guys a question about that before we get into the movie itself. Is just, do you guys, either of you, have you done any extreme haunts? Would you do any extreme haunts? Just curious.
I've never. I actually didn't know what an extreme haunt was, again, until this movie. And would I do one? I feel like Extremity is a cautionary tale. That someday might be a real story, so I'm gonna say no.
Yeah, good call. I think that's a good way to put it. How about you, Anthony?
I have never done one of the extreme haunts. That when I signed on to the movie, there's no way I would do McCamey Manor, and that just because that's to me like. It's like boot camp, it's like military torture, and that's great if some people want to do that. I don't see any fun to it, but things like Blackout, I really wanted to do, but I didn't have time because it was in San Francisco at the time. I didn't have time to go up there, and I know a lot of people who either worked at Blackout or have been through Blackout, and then also Darren Bousman was doing the tension experience here in LA when we were kind of doing the rewrite on the movie, but I've never been through one. I did extensive research when we were developing the script and in pre-production, so I watched a lot of footage because there's a lot of footage you can actually get online and documentaries about this stuff.
You can watch people going through McCamey because that's one of his things. He likes to put a bazillion videos of people going through his haunts.
Yeah, I think more than anything, McCamey is a filmmaker. Like, he wants to be a filmmaker more than anything else.
Well, yeah, that's what he fancies himself as, a filmmaker. I'm not sure I completely agree.
He's kind of the Fred Vogel of haunted houses.
It's just people
vomiting and just screaming at people and holding fish lenses and fishbowl lenses in people's faces. Justin, are you going to ask me if I'll go on one?
I guess so. You know what, Blaine? I've never asked you that question. That's a fair question. I'll just straight up say I will never go on one, Blaine.
Fuck no. No, man, I'm afraid of, like, any situation where people jump out at me. And if they can, like, punch me or grab me, I have a few close friends that run established haunted houses in the Atlanta area. they invite me out, I take like a bunch of Xanaxes and I try to play along and seem cool, but they know I'm afraid. They can sense it when I walk up. I am just, and then they all just sick everybody on me. The last time I went to the haunted house, I had to buy my brother a new t-shirt because I grabbed him and held him in front of me like not unsimilar to like a 4-year-old or 5-year-old would do. So I wanted to give that answer.
Oh, I appreciate it. I'm glad that you asked. You made me ask you because that's a fantastic fantastic answer. I've never been a haunted house guy, period, either. I like going on like haunted rides because like when I'm on the ride, I can close my eyes and I'll be able to get through. If I'm walking and I close my eyes, I'm fucked. So I'm just gonna walk into stuff. So
agreed.
So I'm more into like something where I'm riding something as opposed to, you know, So yeah, and that's just on a regular haunt. The extreme haunts, I'm just like, oh hell no. Like there's just no way. So this movie got under my skin, man.
All right, good.
Dana, you said that you were, you know, you had said that really your big introduction to horror is being in this movie.
Yeah.
What was this experience like for you?
It was like stepping into a different universe and living there for the 18 days we shot. So it was just like an immersive experience. And I mean, the sets we were on were awesome. Very, very creepy. The actual location we were on itself was like a maximum security psychiatric hospital / jail. So it itself was also terrifying. So it was like just scary to be there. I mean, being on set, being with everybody is okay, but there were a lot of elements that, you know, made this environment spooky.
Was it like an active psych ward and
Oh wow, yeah.
See, I'd be afraid to be in makeup and things like that to like get stuck in like a born in East LA situation.
Like the real environment was scarier than the sets because it was a real like a functioning place.
It was a really kind of weird spot, and I honestly every day I would say to someone like, I don't know why they're letting us shoot here. Like,
yeah,
it just seemed wrong. Like,
oh man,
because it was a really big facility, like, you know, sprawling acres. They had probably 20 to 30 buildings, all different variations of from maximum security to minimum security, both adult and juvenile. So you had a maximum security adult facility where they were housing like serial killers, and you had, you know, minimum security juvenile areas where, you know, the patients were walking amongst us, and, you know, they would ask you for cigarettes or want to give you a hug or like,
that's,
you know,
crazy.
You had to be...
And then they would just hear me like shrieking and screaming for some of my parts. And I was like, I mean, I've got to do this, but how inappropriate for all these people that are dealing with all these disorders around me.
That's
a really interesting story in and of itself. Like, to be filming there. Yeah, right. I mean, I feel like there'd be a really interesting documentary about this because I actually people who listen to the podcast would know that I work in the Department of Corrections here in Pennsylvania, and and so I've worked on our psych units and stuff. I actually work in the community now, but I worked in our largest state prison for a while. And I'll tell you, I used to run treatment groups, like cognitive behavioral groups, so like thinking error groups and stuff, with guys who were in what we called our secure special needs unit, which was guys who had really severe mental health problems, but also really severe behavioral health problems, so they couldn't, or behavior problems, so they couldn't be in population. Mm-hmm. And so, like, literally, it would be me running a group with three guys in cages in front of me.
Wow.
That was weird. That was a weird experience. But I did it for, I mean, that particular group I ran for a good year. And I had some interesting experiences. A guy who believed he was the devil and also was impregnated by the devil at the same time. I'm not really sure.
But he
was having 6 of his own babies. So that was interesting. So, I mean, like, you know, I've experienced some of this stuff, but I can't imagine – like filming a movie and these people just being like there, like that's crazy.
Well, and it was concerned, like they were, the guards or the whoever showed us around, they were really nice, and they were like, you know, the actors couldn't, they weren't supposed to travel down these hallways in their cars.
Right.
They weren't supposed, you know, they couldn't go to the bathrooms alone. Like, especially the girls had to be escorted or go in groups because, you know, you watch someone go into the bathroom, someone could easily follow them in.
Yeah, and some of the costumes that your characters in Extremity wear, I could see being pretty horrifying to.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Yeah, some juvenile kids in a psych ward. Holy crap!
Oh my goodness, yes.
Wow, yeah, I'm like, that adds a whole other layer to this movie that I wasn't prepared for.
Not to mention, a lot of these buildings, well, because the ones we shot in were the condemned buildings. You know, and it's funny because the condemned buildings, they had tunnels that led to the main building, so we'd have to go to the main buildings to use the bathrooms and stuff like that. But the condemned buildings were fucking freezing because we shot like in the middle of winter. So right.
It was it shot in Canada as well?
Yeah, yes. In Alberta, in Edmonton, and further north. You know, I mean, we weren't that far from where they shot like The Revenant.
Oh, wow.
In the Alberta area. And you know, we shot all that outdoor stuff, which, you know, Dana is a trooper, and Dylan, who, for, they were wearing not a lot in those scenes. But it was colder in this building than it was outside.
Oh, yeah. Like, just cement. It just keeps the ice cold. It was freezing.
Yeah, and again, saying that I've worked in the Department of Corrections, so even in the buildings we're currently using that have tons and tons of men in them, the jail that I used to work in was built in 1929, and it was all old stone, you know, an old brick, and man, we had the hardest time, even with nice furnaces, keeping that crap warm, you know what I mean? It was, I can imagine having no heaters and everything, it could be ice cold. I mean, that's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, so guys, if folks want to check out this film, what's the best way to do that?
You can, well, right now it's on most streaming platforms, and, you know, you can get it on Blu-ray from the Epic site. They're selling it direct. And the Blu-ray, I'd always say get the Blu-ray, because the Blu-ray has tons of special features on it. The VOD does not. But you can get it on iTunes, Amazon. It's streaming on, I believe, every platform, and then Comcast and things like that, DirecTV and
awesome. Voodoo. So pretty much you can find it anywhere you can stream and get VOD, and you can buy the Blu-ray directly from the Epic site, because you're part of the Dread Central Presents sub-label, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Very cool. Very cool. Before we kind of wrap up, one of the things we like to do is give some other recommendations to the folks listening of things they can check out. And so I'm going to kind of toss it over to Blaine to start us with that, of a recommendation that he kind of thought of in the discussion of what we talked about today. So, Blaine, kick us off with our first recommendation.
Yeah, the movie I ended up picking is a very new release. I think just dropped from Artsploitation Pictures. It is a Chilean film, or Argentinian, I don't know, Chilean, yes, a movie called Trauma. I ended up picking it because it is, you know, with your film being called Extremity, I wanted to mention something that might be a little bit more extreme for your Halloween viewing. And it's basically about a group of women that go out to this kind of countryside place to kind of hang out, drink wine, have fun together, and all of a sudden they are invaded by these, they're basically like, they go into a little bit more in depth, but they were like these holdouts from the Civil War, and it's just these two insane men who show up and basically start tormenting everyone, and it kind of breaks down into this very primal and kind of effects heavy horror flick. It's really gross. It's if you've been watching lots of stuff, you know, heavy on scares, this is not. It's more or less just kind of stomach turning, but it's kind of relieving because lately I just haven't seen a whole lot of stuff along these kind of lines of just being kind of gore fest. We originally were going to show it at Buried Alive last year, but we realized we already had like a little too much of that. I was happy to see it get a release from Artsploitation. It always does a good job of getting films out there for VOD as well as some pretty nice Blu-rays overall. So it's something to check out and just kind of take a break from spooky shit and watch some nasty shit. So that's it is trauma. So have fun. Man, they like kill babies and shit. So heads up.
Oh jeez, yeah,
it's really gross. I don't know why I picked it. Your movie's called Extremity. I watched this. It is gross. Yeah, so don't watch it. I don't know. I give up.
Did either of you guys want to make any other recommendations while we have you here?
I want Dana to make a recommendation.
Well, like other than Mamma Mia 2?
Yeah, other than Mamma Mia 2.
Solid pick. I won't argue it.
Recommendations. I mean, like something new?
It doesn't have to be. Doesn't have to be at all.
What's your favorite
wide
movie?
Open.
What's your favorite
movie? There you
movie?
Go. Okay, just Dana's favorite movie. That's the one I want to know, too.
My favorite movie? I like Blow. That's like one of my all-time favorite movies.
That's a good recommendation. Yeah. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Man. And while it
doesn't fit into like all the stuff we talked about today, I think it's a pretty horrific movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Totally.
Tragic story. He's out of jail now.
It tears my
He's
heart out.
Out
so much.
Oh, is he
oh,
out
God,
now?
He is
out. I literally, because my wife, Natalie, loves that movie. We were watching it again for like the 80th time, like 3 weeks ago. And he just got out again. He just got out. He's out. He's out. That whole sentence is over. He's free. He's on the street.
I need to watch it again.
No, that's awesome. And really, with a lot of our films that we cover, when we do kind of hit the crime and exploitation stuff, it's really, I mean, it falls in line with those kind of films.
Yeah, very much.
Because it's very... it's very exploitative. It's the kind of crime movie I like, which is like, look how awesome crime is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, that's the cat. Like, I recently saw White Boy Rick, and I was like, this
is
a down. Yeah, where's all the fun? We never get to see the fun. It's miserable. I want to see, like, how awesome being a criminal is. And
yeah,
I don't want to
see. Working for the Department of Corrections, I would say, crime doesn't usually get you the places that you really want
no.
them to get you.
I am a super basic bitch. I love Scarface. I love all that. I just want to watch movies about, like, just selling cocaine and buying lavish furs and chains. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, he bought the chain and then he goes to jail? That's awful. And
That's awful.
Give the kid a couple of days. Have some fun, but yeah, no, I think Blow is like a great example of really like you're rooting for him, and I love that aspect of the film.
Yeah,
good. Anthony, do you have anything else you want to suggest to the folks?
Well, you know, to go along with Extremity, if you haven't seen Haunters, Art of the Scare, which is a documentary that's playing right now, John, the director, actually. We have a conversation on the Blu-ray together, so I'm going to pimp his movie.
That's awesome because I actually paired that myself. When I watched Extremity, I watched that and Haunters back-to-back. So,
there you go.
It was a perfect 1-2, you know?
And for anyone following me on the Farsighted blog.com, I reviewed those movies in back-to-back days.
That is true. That is true, yeah. So over on the website, they're up there. That's true.
So and, if you haven't watched it yet, I don't know what you're waiting for.
Exactly. And I guess I will wrap us up, and I'm gonna be real basic here for you too, there, Blaine. But one of my favorite musicals to watch this time of year is Little Shop of Horrors. I'm just such a huge fan. I rediscovered how much I loved that a couple years ago, and now I've been watching it very regularly since, and I listen to the soundtrack pretty regularly as well. If you're not familiar with Little Shop of Horrors, I don't know what to tell you. Just
I don't know. The,
check
to
it
me,
out
the effects in that movie are black magic. It's witchcraft. I watched that movie, and I'm like, that plant is fucking alive. To this day, I do not know. I mean, I know. I watched the behind the scenes, but I don't believe it. It's witchcraft.
No, it is such a it is mind blowing. That's one of those movies I grew up just as a kid, you know, with a lot of stuff that I would just kind of have on rotation, and that was part of it. And now I don't want to sing Fernando anymore. I want to sing Skid Row. Like, real loud.
Such a good song.
It is a good song. Yeah. And I think we know what song we'll be taking out this podcast once I put it together now, because, man, that's such so good. So good. So, guys, thanks again for coming along, giving us some more recommendations, just talking about, you know, good movies for this time of year. And, you know, everyone should go check out Extremity everywhere VOD is. It's like you said, I've seen it on all the services, so people can check that out. We'll put a link here in the podcast that people can go pick up the Blu-ray as well. So thanks again, guys.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate you coming on the show. Like I mentioned before, I'm a big fan of Anthony's, and so happy to have the both of them with us today. Thank you guys all for listening. We love you all. Go check out, we got the t-shirts up, we got the hats up, they're fucking dope, over at the Big Cartel store. And just let everyone know, if you are in the Southeast, we are putting up the schedule right now. By the time you hear this, all the schedule will be up for Buried Alive Film Festival. We put together a fucking awesome festival this year, so if you're not done with Halloween and you want to roll into November and keep it going, fucking check it out. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're both going to be there, as well as a few of our guests. So thank you all again, and we will see you next time. Peace.
Give me my shot or I'll rot here. Downtown. And I will get out of here. Downtown. I'll start climbing uphill and get out of here. Downtown. Someone tell me I still could get out of here. Someone tell Lady Luck that I'm stuck here. It sure would be swell to get out of here. Bid the gutter farewell and get out of here. I'd move heaven and